This is KCUR 89.3. Over the past few years, a growing movement of at-home do-it-yourselfers have been strapping electrodes to their heads and bragging about improvements in brain function. As strange a sight as these hobbyists might be, what may be even stranger is what they're doing might actually work. KCUR's Alex Smith reports.
Hello, everybody out there in YouTube land.
A quick YouTube search will turn up lots of these videos.
I feel kind of freaked out right now. I don't even really know if I'm doing this right.
They're almost all young men wearing what look like elastic headbands connected to batteries.
It's kind of like a slight euphoria, but that's not the right word for it. It's like
the videos offer tips for using transcranial direct current stimulation at home, and testimonials that zapping your brain leads to improvements in learning languages, playing chess, or just improving video game performance.
I'm looking at myself in my camera, and I look insane.
For me as a researcher, I think it's an interesting choice that people would, you know, go for using something that we are explicitly saying we don't very well understand.
Dr. Leela Krisiku is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Kansas. Recent research on low-level electric brain stimulation has been promising, but Krisiku says that without standard methods or devices, what the hobbyists are doing could be ineffective or even dangerous.
I don't think it's particularly bright as a decision.
Krisiku herself is interested in the potential of brain stimulation, however, and she's hopeful it can be saved from the sketchy reputation created by the do-it-yourselfers. She thinks someday it could be used as an alternative to psychoactive drugs, and she's among the first researchers to look at whether TDCS can enhance creativity. In controlled experiments, her lab looks at what happens when electricity dampens function in the brain's frontal lobe.
The part that we're using for selecting specific aspects of our memory about the world or making high-order decisions or problem-solving, if we have that part of the brain not as engaged as it usually is, that can benefit performance on aspects of flexible thinking.
The idea goes something like this. Our ordinary thinking causes us to see objects in terms of how we've used them in the past. When that function is inhibited, we notice more basic qualities that are usually taken for granted, things like shape or size or weight, and that creates a new perspective. It's the kind of thinking that we sometimes do in a crisis.
Usually under normal circumstances, you don't think of your chair as a shield, whereas if there's an emergency, then you will think of these objects in those alternative ways.
Early studies by Krisiku and a handful of other researchers have shown that electrical stimulation does seem to increase the capacity for flexible thinking. When subjects are wired up and shown everyday objects, they come up with more alternative uses for them and do it faster than subjects without the stimulation. But is this really a useful measure of creativity?
The so-called standard definition of creativity is that creative things are both original but also in some way effective.
Dr. Mark Runko is a psychology professor at the University of Georgia and the founder of the Creativity Research Journal. He explains that creativity often means not just coming up with a lot of original ideas, but coming up with the one idea that will solve a complicated real-life problem. So creativity for an architect might be a very different combination of abilities than creativity for a painter.
Creativity really relies on intrinsic motivation and spontaneity and a kind of a freedom of thought, and it is very sensitive.
Creativity research has boomed in the past several years thanks to breakthroughs in neuroscience and genetics, and it's captured the imagination of a general public eager to try websites, apps, and other technologies that claim, often without much evidence, to make people more creative. Runko says many individual tests done in labs, like the one being used at KU, can be a useful source for evaluating aspects of creativity, but they're just individual pieces of a bigger picture.
What we're going to do is first make a small mark on your head.
When I visited Dr. Krisiku's lab, I decided to sign a waiver and try TDCS for myself. She dipped the electrodes in liquid and then put one on my forehead and one on the back of my neck. When it was turned on, there was no big zap or flash of lightning, just what felt like small mosquito bites under the electrodes. And I didn't feel more creative.
I had to place one of my electrodes. Yeah.
Dr. Krisiku acknowledges that her tests can only measure so much, but they're part of the exhaustive work that's required if the field is going to move beyond the marketing hype of brain-boosting gizmos.
People can find the apps and the interventions enjoyable or fun, but the arguments that they actually change your brain in that very specific way that would improve performance on X, Y, and Z, that's very different.
With the help of a new grant, Dr. Krisiku and her partners at the University of Pennsylvania plan to dig deeper into what TDCS routines work best and whether they have long-term effects. Alex Smith, KCUR News.
Alex Smith reports for Heartland Health Monitor, a health reporting collaboration based here at KCUR 89.3.